Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Cynthia McClure. Our first interviews today are from KHOI correspondent Jim Werbel, who looked into the idea of co-preneurship, in which partners and married couples go into business together. He interviewed Gary and Karen Youngberg, the creators and owners of Ames Silversmith. Jim also interviewed the creators and owners of Arcadia Coffee, also located in Ames. They are Ryan Jeffrey and Liz Nyler. I interviewed Mike Wheelock, Utilities Customer Service Supervisor of the City of Ames Electric Services, about a policy change and how it has affected the lives of people in need in the City of Ames. But first, the weather. Today, mostly cloudy with a high near 31. North, northeast winds around 7 miles per hour. This evening, mostly cloudy with a low around 21, with a northeast wind of 5 to 8 miles per hour, becoming southeast after midnight. Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 34. South, southeast winds at 9 to 15 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 21 miles per hour. Tuesday evening, mostly cloudy with a low around 25 degrees. If you have just tuned in, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Up next is correspondent Jim Werbel, who interviewed the creators and owners of longtime local business, Ames Silversmith.
Welcome to the show, Gary and Karen. Appreciate you coming here today. What I'd like to do is just start from the beginning of your relationship. How did the two of you meet?
When we were sophomores in high school, had gone to a few of the dances together, but not together, and knew of each other. I was sort of the class clown growing up, and she had heard about me that way. And then we had a biology class together. That was the start of our wonderful relationship.
Karen?
We were both on varsity golf teams for Davenport Central. We're both from the Quad Cities originally. We were, as wonderful relationships usually end up, we were best friends first and then ended up getting married.
Did you both have jobs before you started Ames Silversmithing?
Yes. My first job, I was bat boy for the Quad City Angels growing up for 2 years. After that, I worked at Woolworth, and then I worked in a nursery. And after that, my regular job was Ames Silversmithing.
And actually, I was a playground director growing up. Matter of fact, my passion and interest was always city park administration, and that's where I took my college career with. But because of the job market and because we had decided to stay in Ames, my first job was outside of college was a legal secretary, which actually ended up being very helpful in us starting up a business.
Your website says that you started Ames Silversmithing in 1976. You were both much younger then.
Much younger, a little bit more hair. I actually, my first year of college was paid for with a scholarship based on my academics and my need. My father had died when I was 12, and my mom didn't have any money to put me through college, and I was fortunate enough to receive a scholarship to the University of Iowa. I ground through a year down there, missing my girlfriend, Karen.
I was at Iowa State.
And she convinced me to come up to Iowa State and give it a spin. And quite frankly, I didn't fare well in college, and I was actually going to be a policeman in Davenport after she finished her degree, but we decided we would give Ames Silversmith a spin, and we actually opened in 1976 when we were 19 years old with $1,500.
Actually, when he was at the University of Iowa, he checked out two books from the University of Iowa Library on silversmithing because he wanted to make me something and he couldn't afford to buy it.
I actually had a torch in my dorm room.
Right now.
My study desk was a bench, and I actually created jewelry in my dorm room and sold them to the girls in the dorms, and we started doing a few art fairs. And then when I came to Iowa State, continued that, did art in a park for any number of years, and it showed us that we thought we could give business a spin.
We had a product that people were enjoying.
So your business actually started out of the home, so to speak,
yes,
even though you had no home at the time?
Exactly right, yes.
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 I give her all my love, that's all I do. And if you saw my love, you'd love her too. I love her.
What was your reaction when Gary started doing this, Karen?
Having dated him since I was 16, I knew he was a hard worker no matter what. And I think first of all, we were so young that we didn't have to worry about feeding a family or paying a mortgage at that time. The idea of going into business was a good one. Why not? We were 19. And so if it didn't work, and by the time I graduated, if we had to do something different, we had, you know, plenty of time to do that. It wasn't until after we had been in business probably 20 years that I found out my father really didn't think we were going to make it. And so, you know, he told me, he goes, I gave you 5 years. We never borrowed any money to start our business. We never borrowed money for inventory. We just took it very slowly and watched the dollars and made it work.
When we decided to open, I had $1,500 in my savings account. And so by the time I bought a showcase, phone service, some rent, I was basically broke. And I was a waiter at a sorority here, so I was able to eat at least. And I was very eager. I made some flyers, and I'd go out and hand them out to people. And here was a kid that's 19 with a little bit longer hair, and come see us, and this is what I'm doing. And every year we've grown a little bit, little bit, little bit. And now here we are 38 years later. With 9 employees, both our sons deep in the business with us. Dave Anderson and Scott Sorum, 2 longtime key employees that are certainly like family, and some other employees as well. That
describe your business as it is today.
It is very consuming, but we're passionate and we all enjoy what we're doing. If I had to equate it to something, I'd say we're a very well-greased wheel. Everybody knows what they do and what they do well. We all wear many hats. We don't have a folder that goes ahead and talks about job description. Communication is paramount in our business. We really do have things down pat per se, but you know, you can't stagnate. I think a business is ever changing. There are some things that have to stay the same, but there are some things that have to change. Sometimes that's where our discussions come in a little, and
she calls it discussions.
But it's not just Gary and I anymore. Dave Anderson has been with us for 35 years. Scott Sorum over 16 or 17 years. And obviously our son's been with us for 12 years now. Everybody's input is very important to us because we all see things differently. Yes, the bottom line of decisions go to the owners, which is Gary, myself, and our 2 sons.
At times there's disagreements about future directions, what should be done, etc. How do you work through those disagreements?
I listen to my wife. She may not think I listen to my wife, but she has definitely been the visionary for AIM Silversmithing. I tend to see a bit more right in front of me, and Karen is much more in tune with looking outside the box, expansions. I'm not as eager to change, but after I gripe about it for a little bit, come around to listening to her, and we come to some sort of an agreement, and I say, yeah, you were right all along.
How do you work through disagreements? Oh.
First of all, there's the paramount, first and foremost, in any working relationship that works well, you have to have respect for each other. And there have been times where, you know, we had to stop talking about it because we couldn't make any headway with each other on where to go and how to do it and when. But the bottom line is you have to be willing to come back to the table and say in a very logical and rational way why you support one decision versus the other and expansion. There was one point where we had to take our building down to the ground because it was structurally not fixable. And Gary had very, very reasonable concerns about, well, what was that going to do to sales? But that's where entrepreneurs take those risks. And we were in the basement of Roy's TV on Main Street for 3 months. And we made that leap, and we obviously gave our contractor a true deadline because we couldn't miss the Christmas season. But that time that we had established, we are a destination type of business. And we went to Roy's TV, and our sales didn't miss a beat.
I sense that Gary said earlier that he was the class clown. It seems like there's a lot of humor in your relationship because of what he learned earlier in life.
I think that's true. And I mean, if you come into our store on any particular day, if you don't hear a lot of laughing and jocularity, it would be surprising because we find that to be critical part of our business. It's just part of our ambiance. I'm not going to be the guy that wears the suit coat and the tie.
And yet, our salespeople, we want to be very professional. Our staff is very well trained and very poised and very professional. But we also have a very relaxed mode in our store that allows us, when it is appropriate, to have great conversations. We talk about everything. But here comes back to that word respect. You know, if you respect each individual, you can talk about a lot of things.
She gives me everything and tenderly the kiss my lover brings, she brings to me, and I love her.
One of the things I've noticed in many co-preneur relationships is that the husband and wife or marital partners often segment their jobs. And it seems like, Gary, you do more of the production and Karen runs the business. Is that accurate?
My primary job is the production of jewelry, moving inventory in and out, handling customers on a daily basis, advertising, shoveling the snow. I mean, I wear every hat. Karen wears most of them. Key to the business is bookkeeping portion of it. Managing our pension plan was a critical part over the last 20 years or so.
And going back to the entrepreneurship mold, you do have to wear a lot of hats. I actually handled our pension plan over the last 35 years. I just realized that, and here again, you have to be flexible and change. We had a situation where I realized that Gary and I need to make a change in that particular part of the business. And so have to be looking out for your employees, what's the best for the business. I do a lot of working with making sure that our basic displays look what good. I think women in particular are more conscientious about seeing things first that need to be replaced. Like we both talk about this good purchase for the store. There's been many consultations that we work together on stone buying. My father mentored me. I don't actually have a degree in finance, but what I was mentored and then I had a business minor helped my side of the business in a lot of the financial investment part for the pension plan that we shared with our employees.
As you know, Valentine's Day is approaching. I'm curious, what, if any, segments of your business increase at this time of year?
Well, certain engagement ring buying is key in the next couple of weeks. Overall, jewelry sales go up for Valentine's Day, though certainly nothing compared to the Christmas and holiday season late in the year.
I think one of the more unique things about our store is where we do a lot of custom work. We also sell a lot of manufactured pieces. But you only have so much room and square footage to work with at times.
We're sort of stone junkies at the store. We own lots of different stones, from diamonds to precious stones, semi-precious, various agates, an incredible range. And so we're able to produce pretty much whatever people want with the inventory that we have. And it's really a function of growing from very, very small to bigger and watching our finances and making sure the money was spent wisely.
Do you get people outside of Ames coming to your store frequently?
It's a broad range of people that come into Ames Silversmithing. I do the deposits and I see the amount of checks that come through and where they're from. And you think of a town within an hour, and this is our clientele, primarily northeast and west of us, Ziering, Roland, McCallsburg, Iowa Falls. Those are our clients.
And we also, once we do have a customer, I mean, we've had a lot of customers move out of state because of what Ames is, and we continue to hear from them on a regular basis.
What do you think are your biggest challenges that you face today in operating your business?
Continued growth. Nothing pending, but does Ames Silversmithing stay the size it is? Does it try to get bigger where we're at? Do we do a second store? You know, we've often thought of going to Ankeny or Des Moines because of the market area there. But then, Gary asked me, we were in our 30s and we were ready. We could have done an expansion or a second store at that, or I should say a second store out of town. And, you know, it came down to the simple question, do you want more money or do you want me home at night? And we had small children. And my obvious answer at that time was, I want you home at night and being able to be a coach for my kids' soccer team or whatever. And
we have five grandchildren, and they come down the store regularly, and they're involved with looking at stones, and they love it. And, you know, my wildest dreams would be if they come into the business and make it a third-generation business.
But see, this is the visionary. I constantly ponder not just the next 5 years, but the next 20 years.
Let me add one thing about growth there, because growth can come in a lot of different ways. It can come in growing profits, growing sales, physically growing in size. There's a lot of different ways. And I'm very comfortable in life right now. I'm 59. I get out to play golf when I want to, go on vacation, you know, adequately. And I'm a little afraid of growing too big. And I've expressed this to Karen through the years, and she's fortunately guided me along without big, big, grandiose plans. And I just don't want to have the business control me or my family. We should be able to control the business.
And there is a certain ambiance about this being a very special place, you know, just having one store that does what we do. Part of our allure, I think, is the fact that we're homegrown, hometown. We're big enough to accommodate many different requests, but small enough to feel very personal.
Let me follow through on this. Balancing work and family in a small business is always a challenge. It seems like you've made some business choices to balance those two.
They always say that it's hard to start a business, but they say the second and third and continuing generations, it's even harder to keep that business running.
In what way do you think the business has actually strengthened your marriage?
It's certainly a focal point of our relationship. We have common ideas and common goals, and whether that's, you know, business or, you know, we love the same kind of sports. I mean, when you're working together, for us anyway, it adds so much to the ambiance of our lives together and the beauty of our lives together.
Yeah, common interest, I think, strengthens a lot of relationships.
It's a partnership.
Yes.
I have a hard time understanding how family members cannot work together, but that's a lot. And I know we are certainly the aberration, but you know, we just meld so beautifully together that it never even enters my mind that other people struggle with those types of family issues in a business.
And that does go back to communication and
respect.
Bright are the stars that shine. Dark is the sky. I know this love of mine will never die, and I love her.
One of the issues many entrepreneurs have is passing the firm on to the next generation. Would you care to talk about that? It's obvious your sons plan on taking over the business someday.
Absolutely. And here again, you go to the, what is my talent? What is my knowledge? And if you don't have the necessary tools within yourself and the people you're working with, you need to seek outside help, either an attorney or an insurance person. And succession of a business isn't as mind-boggling in our particular situation because we're not 6-7 stores in different states and such like that. But seeking out the appropriate people to help you accomplish that would just be logical. Succession comes in many different forms you have to consider.
And I think it's key, too, with our boys being involved as co-owners, that they understand their roles in the business, even though they overlap quite a bit. Kyle is like one half of me, and Kirk is the other half of me. And the beauty is they don't step on each other's toes. They laugh and tell jokes back and forth. They understand their roles as the business continues on.
So in other words, you've let them develop their own roles themselves.
Pretty much.
And then when you leave, someone else may have to take over the roles that you take, or they're going to have to expand their roles.
And once again, you know, Gary's always consulting with the boys about this purchase or that purchase, or what do you think about this situation, or if you have a customer that you need to handle differently. You know, it's all about sharing the knowledge.
Bright are the stars that shine. Dark is the sky. I know this love of mine will never die, and I love her.
One last question. What advice do you have to give to a couple who are thinking of becoming co-preneurs for some business?
Well, certainly I would go back to Karen's comments that mutual respect for each other's ideas and a communication between those people, which is not just in business but in marriage as well, is key to making it work.
And maybe even outlining early on, obviously Gary's forte is his knowledge of stones and the industry in and of itself. Early on, I had a little bit more knowledge than I have retained today just because I had to focus on several different things. But when it comes down to him showing me a parcel of emeralds, I have my opinion. I'm asking how much they cost, but I truly leave the end decision up to him because I trust his knowledge. Vice versa, when it came down to, let's go back to the pension plan issues, and I actually was the manager and buyer. We did not have somebody managing the pension plan, and I'd tell him I was interested in buying 200 shares of X, Y, and Z, and he'd go, well, you know more about that than I do. And he had no trouble trusting my decision on that. So I think one of the main things is not to always think you have to have a equal input and struggle with whose decision gets made. I think there needs to be lines as to who has the most knowledge pertaining to the area of the business.
Anything else you'd like to add to the listener to help understand your business operation?
We are living the American dream. We may not be nationally known. We have made a statement and an impact in our area. We have enjoyed this journey that we're on. We hope our sons continue to enjoy the journey, maybe with their children.
Thank you very much for your time and effort.
There's a reason for the sunshine sky, and there's a reason why I'm feeling so high. Must be the season when that love light shines all around us.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. That interview was by Jim Werbel and the owners of Ames Silversmith, Gary and Karen Youngberg, about co-preneurship. Up next is an interview Jim Werbel did with the creators and owners of Arcadia Coffee, Ryan Jeffries and Liz Nyler.
Just let your love flow.
Welcome to the show, Ryan and Liz. I'm pleased that you were able to come and talk to us today about Arcadia Coffee. Let's start from the beginning of your relationship. How did the two of you meet?
Her brother brought her to a party at a friend of mine's house, and we met there, and party moved over to my house, and then we got together probably 2 or 3 weeks later.
Yep, my brother is just about 4 years older than me, and we both attended the University of Iowa, and I figured that if I met somebody at one of his organizations or one of his parties, that this person would already be vetted and would be a good option.
Any special attractions at first?
I don't know. He was a little bit older. I remember shorter hair, and we didn't really exchange information at the picnic or the parties. I used what is commonly referred to at Iowa State as stalker net. I kind of knew a first name, and I thought I knew a last name, so I looked him up and emailed him, and the rest is history.
And we were both biology major people, so we had a certain level of similar interest in scientific mindsets. So,
did you have jobs before you started Arcadia Coffee?
I used to work at First National Bank when we first moved to Ames. I wanted to start culinary school classes at the DMAC Iowa Culinary Institute immediately, but there was a wait list. So I had about a year and a half to take some time and get to know Ames before I enrolled in school. So I worked at First National Bank as a teller, and then I enrolled in school. I worked at the cafe. I worked at Panera, various places, just building the skills we needed.
And before we moved here, we both worked at a chocolate factory in Iowa City, Bochner Chocolates in Iowa City. I was in production there, and she was primarily counter sales and helping in production sometimes. And then my main job here still is an engineer out at Power Film, making flexible solar cells.
Interesting. So it seems as if you were thinking of starting a business independently earlier in your lives.
I think both of us actually had the upbringing with the entrepreneurial spirit. My dad had opened some of his own businesses along the way. He was also an engineer, although an electrical engineer. We've just always had that, if you can't find exactly what you're looking for, make it happen for yourself.
And I think we started discussing the idea of opening a shop of some kind while we were both still working at Bochner in Iowa City, be it chocolate, pastry, coffee, slowly branching out into more of the areas that we're interested in.
It wasn't originally my background, but I knew as soon as I graduated from University of Iowa that I was not going to continue in my field as a biologist. And I looked at baking as a way that I always relaxed, and it was something I enjoyed doing. So I thought I would pursue it professionally.
What year did you start Arcadia Coffee?
That is more of a more interesting question. So it had been a mind experiment, I would say, for 5 or 6 years. We actually filed for the name and a lot of the LLC documents in 2010. We actually opened our doors March 2011. And in between there, we did a lot of the construction ourselves. There was just a lot of things that had to be done before we could open the doors.
We're innately cheap people, so we did as much of the work as possible on the entire shop ourselves. We spent a lot of time looking through auctions to find all of our equipment. So most of our equipment is used, including a fair amount of equipment, or at least some major pieces that are considerably older than either of us.
From your website, it sounds like, Ryan, you initiated the idea to start it.
Is that what our website says?
One of our friends did the website for us, and there were a couple little, I don't know if you would call them Easter eggs, but things he took upon himself to put in. So I think it's one of our banners states, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we opened a coffee shop? As Ryan's voice, and Liz says, only if I'm allowed to bake.
Right.
And you said, all right, sounds good.
So that's not accurate.
It very well could. Like I said, we talked about it for a lot of years before we actually pulled the trigger, and I don't remember the specifics around pulling the trigger on opening at this point. But yeah, a high school classmate of mine had built the website for us.
Why did you decide on a coffee shop and versus some other type of food service?
I never liked coffee at all. I always hated it. My grandma always used the percolator. You could see through the bottom of the cup. And it wasn't until Ryan started roasting coffee at Bochner Chocolates. He got interested in home roasting. And after that, I decided that there was a whole another facet of coffee that I just had never known. There was actual flavor. There was body. There were more things happening in the cup. And his cup's of coffee you can't see through. So when we moved to Ames, we do like the coffee house culture, and we went to as many as we could go to. We moved here in 2005, and so there was a far fewer coffee shops, but we didn't necessarily care for the roast profiles or the way the coffee was made. And we also decided that there wasn't a place where you could have homemade baked goods as well as good coffee. So that was really what inspired us to go ahead and open in Ames, because we just felt that that was a market that wasn't fully saturated.
What are you trying to do with your business?
Really, a lot of our focus was in trying to bring something that we believed in and cared about and thought that people should be able to enjoy more than they necessarily do, with the premium coffee, premium baked goods, doing as much as we could from scratch and here and having people involved in it. To me, it creates a different interaction with the product if it's all being made from scratch there, if it's all being as much of the work as possible is being done at the location and people can see it and kind of interact with it. So our kitchen is all visible from the front of the coffee shop. The roaster is sitting there, and I really like people being able to see how things are being made and what's being made and get a sense of the product, as well as then enjoying exactly what comes out of all of that work.
So if you've been into our shop, we do pour over coffee. And the way we have it set up is the pour over station is directly interactive with the customer. And we're not the first people who have done this in Ames. We didn't invent the process, but we did bring it to the forefront. So customers had never seen coffee made like that, so they had a lot of questions. We were able to give some education and just have it. It's more of an experience. 30 seconds later, there was more to it.
I'd like to learn what each of you do for the business.
Yeah, so I set up the roaster and the roast process, and anytime we get a new bean, I create the recipe for roasting it, basically, which is a profile of temperatures and gas flows to try to bring the bean from this green, hard, break your tooth if you attempt to eat it thing to something that's grindable into good coffee. And so I go through and I spend a couple of experimental tries through a roast to find the exact flavor set I want out of the bean. And so I set those profiles. Initially, I did all the roasting because there was a lot more setup, and nowadays Liz is doing a lot of the roasting as well. I also try to do most of our equipment maintenance.
So most of my days, I get up around 5. I'm at the shop around 6:30. I do all of the training, and I do open the shop, I think, 4 days a week currently. So I do work full amount of hours, but I do the training, I do the books, I do the payroll, I do anything that needs to be done. If somebody comes in sick or calls in sick, that's me. I'd take a portion of that responsibility to just say what our scone flavors are when the bread comes out of the oven.
And I do most of our design work for our advertisements. I've done a lot of that. Liz has done some as well, but creating the draft and then finalizing the advertisements into their form that we can put them out into a publication.
There's lots of opportunities for disagreements in operating a business.
I would say both of us are really fairly laid back people. I like to pick my fights, and I would assume that if Ryan has a vision in his head, that I'm going to trust that because I've liked the things he's done in the past. And if it doesn't really matter to me, if I don't have the time to think it through, then I will just pass that on. I would say he's pretty laid back too, and I voice my opinions and he'll usually go with them.
I'm actually not being able to think of a single real disagreement on the business we've had the whole time, the whole process. We've had our fights with the outside, but never really between each other.
We've always kind of put a solidified front up. And like I said, it took probably 5 years to open the shop. And we had a lot of discussions. What do you think about this? Do you think this aspect of a cafe we visit would work in Ames? How can we make it better? How can we improve upon it? So it was really a thought process that had been very well discussed before we ever opened our doors.
So you asked each other a lot of questions, tried to figure out what the other person thinks.
We may not either one of us be using our biology degrees in our current professional lives, but a lot of that comes out of our scientific background. Okay, let's analyze all of our options, weigh, discuss, trade-off ideas, and I think that plays a lot into our general approach to try to get all the ideas in place and then filter. And
I think just being easygoing and trusting each other and figuring out where does it matter to, you know, come to an agreement. Where should we put our energies, or what is just another day that doesn't really matter? You know, we let some things go that just, they don't matter at the end of the day.
As you know, Valentine's Day is approaching. Are any segments of your business pick up during Valentine's Day?
We were really hoping they would. Our hours are until 6 o'clock at night. So sometimes we had put together little packages that have truffles, or we would have something that people could pick up on the way home. But without having more extended hours, without having a liquor license, people don't tend to want to come in. They'd rather have dinner and wine at a restaurant or something that's a little bit more full service. So we do gear some of our flavors. We'll do a white chocolate raspberry mocha or something chocolate related, raspberry, strawberry, those types of things. But it's usually just a normal day. It's not like door.
I do, however, think that as Valentine's Day comes around, a lot of people give up on their New Year's resolutions of diets and restraining themselves from tasty foods and such. And so we do see a general pickup through the month of February.
Can you give me some of the business challenges you're currently facing?
There have been 2 coffee shops that have closed or relocated, other coffee shops that have opened, other coffee shops that have, you know, gone a different route. So just the way the environment changes, how many coffee shops are there available within a square mile? How much new housing is there going to be around us? Getting the word out is always an issue. Print media, I think, is not nearly as effective. Social media, with all the new guidelines, Facebook is no longer free. For most businesses, it's a lot harder to reach people. So I'm always confident that as soon as you come in my door, you'll come back. But it's getting you in my door that's always difficult.
And we've been dealing with the amount of development that's happening in Campus Town right now. Changes a lot of the traffic flows through, but it's also there's been interest in our own location for development. And so we've been going back and forth with a potential developer. And it appears now that that is not going to move forward at this time. But that's been a significant challenge in terms of just trying to think through and work through, okay, if this is going to happen, how is it going to go? And it's taken a fair bit of time and energy looking into that.
Anytime we have a business, I always say it's a big question of guess and check. We'll try something and we'll see how the customers respond. Flavors of lattes, different roast profiles, how the shop is set up, you know, where is seating, how many big tables, how many little tables. It's really, you do it, you wait 3 months and just see how people react.
Continuous experimentation.
Always.
Good example, actually, in speaking of the tables is right when we opened, we had all of our small tables relatively close to each other in a row, and we would notice that people would sit at the farthest possible, and people would feel really uncomfortable if there wasn't a fairly distant table for them to sit at. And so we put in these little gauze curtains between the tables to see if we could get people to sit closer to each other, and that did work. People started sitting at tables because there was some separation. Now, most of the time when I go into the shop, the curtains are pulled to the side and people are sitting closer to each other and being more willing to be in a closer environment with each other.
Let's talk about your family for a bit. How many years have the two of you been married?
We've only been married for 3, but we've been together since 2003.
That sounds right. I'm going to trust her on these dates.
So yeah, we were together quite a long time before we were actually married.
Do you have any children yet?
We do not. We have 2 dogs.
Two dogs and a small business keeps us plenty busy.
I was going to ask that, running a business, especially with someone else working in a job, it's kind of 24/7.
It is. And we don't take a ton of it home, but by default, when I do the books and I'm doing the grocery shopping and I do the scheduling, when I'm not at work, I'm still working at home. He'll come home and I'll be working on something, and I just, sometimes it's time to put it away, and he makes sure that I do that every so often to actually have some downtime, but otherwise working is kind of my stable state.
She's very bad at taking downtime or relaxing, actually. Has to be encouraged from time to time, and I do some to help out on the books when I can, but a lot of it's stuff that I just can't do because she has the interaction with all the receipts. She knows where everything is, so there's only so much I can.
How do you balance work and family then? Because it is so committing for both of you and holding down a full-time job.
Right now, I would say we probably don't have what I would consider the healthiest work-life separation. I generally encourage people to have a much better work-life separation than we have. But during this developmental time for the business, that's kind of the nature of it. And I mean, and how your time goes on that front. During certain periods of time in the development of your career, you end up sacrificing that. But I think we're getting to the point that we'll be able to get to maintaining a more long-term sustainable and healthy balance between our work lives and our non-work lives.
So one thing, as we set up the hours at Arcadia, we are open 7 days a week, but Sunday dinner was always with Ryan's parents. So I made sure that there was 1 shift on Sundays instead of 2. So the shop closes at 4 o'clock so that I can go home and get ready, take a rest, take some deep breaths, and then do family dinner between 5 and 6 o'clock on Sundays. So that's something that I have very much held true to.
Has the business strengthened your marriage?
I think we had a strong relationship previously, and the business gives us things to focus on that aren't nitpicking of, hey, why can't you undo the socks when you take them off your feet and get them in the hamper? You know, there's just not enough energy at the end of the day. I can only say it so often.
It's also possible that through the business and the time that she ends up spending now at work, it's not actually great for us, but she's become more like me in a lot of aspects, more prone to forget about things because distracted by too many other things going on. And so a few things slip by, and I think there's a certain amount of understanding a little bit more my nature on those things now that she also experiences some of them.
Has the business been a source of any marital discord?
No, As we said earlier, we really haven't had any fights involved with the business or any such thing. So we're calm enough, laid back enough people. We pretty much just look at it and move forward.
At least one of the mantras is, you know, it's just a coffee shop. It's something that we enjoy doing, that I like doing. I can't see myself doing anything else right now. But I'm not solving world hunger. There, you know, I'm not progressing world peace. I'm not. It's a coffee shop. If something were to happen to it, I'd find something else to do. I love it. It's working for us right now, but it doesn't define me and it doesn't define our life. And I think that that's a big difference, filling.
You both come from entrepreneurial families. Is this your first try? Are you going to start another business maybe later in the future?
I won't rule the future out. We've got our hands pretty full right now. It's our first joint venture.
I always say that I just want one good, successful local business that when people come back, alumni or people who have moved out and have come back, oh, do you remember that place, Arcadia? We should go back there. You know, that was great. I remember the coffee. I remember the people. I just want to be that one fixture. Maybe someday we'll do something completely different if I find some good people to manage and to continue Arcadia. Pretty much takes care of that.
One final question. What advice do you have to give a couple who are thinking about becoming copreneurs?
Be prepared for a slow build. It took us 3 years before Liz was even really fully getting paid at the shop. Especially in the restaurant world, most businesses don't survive the first year, and it's because they're not coming into it with the financial preparation to deal with the slow build in clientele. And have one of you have a stable job with a stable income. Having both people, unless you have a huge savings account to work through, having both people in a relationship relying on a new business for income is going to be a real challenging thing to do.
And I would say have that thought process. Maybe take a year, take 2 years, travel, see what's out there, talk about what you want to do. I'm not a huge fan of the business plan because a lot of it tends to be made up, or you don't really know what your business is going to do until you're living it. But think about all those little aspects and see if you're the person who can work 80 hours a week, if you're a person who can cancel your plans because somebody called in sick. And also just respect each other's opinions and decide what you can get by with, decide what you're going to fight with. And at the end of the day, just let it go.
Thank you.
That was an interview by KHOI correspondent Jim Werbel. He interviewed the creators and owners of Arcadia Coffee, Ryan Jeffrey and Liz Naylor, about copreneurship. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Cynthia McClure. I had the opportunity to interview Jim Wheelock, who is the Utility Customer Services Supervisor of the City of Ames, Electric Services, about the policy change and how it has affected the lives of people in need in our local community.
This is Cynthia McClure. I'm here at the KHOI studios with Mike Wheelock, who is a utility account supervisor with the City of Ames. And I understand there's a little change in the Ames Electric Services are administrating the Project Share program. You want to explain that?
This program started after the legislature passed a law requiring all electric and gas utilities to offer a customer contribution fund, which would have customers of the utility contribute to a fund that would then assist low-income customers of the utility. And they made it kind of general as to what it was, but it had to either help with weatherization or payment of bills. We started this program then after that law was passed in 1989, so we're in our 26th year of it. On average, we assist about 120 to 130 households per year. It's approximately $20,000 per winter season that goes to assistance. And this is all from the generosity of our customers helping other customers of the utility. The recent change was the City of Ames Electric Services going to assume all the costs of administrating our Project Share program. Currently, they were getting 5% of the donations to offset part of their costs. So by making this change, we're now able to have approximately $800 additional funds that we can use to assist low-income customers of the utility.
And this is a big change for the city, giving all the donations. So everything that goes into the donations for the project share goes to people in need.
That's
100%.
That's correct. It used to be 95 cents out of every dollar went for assistance. Now every dollar donated goes to assistance. We've had a slight decline in contributions over the years, and we were just looking at ways to get additional money to assist low-income customers of our utility.
So how many extra people does this help?
This should help about 7 or 8 households.
So this is a big deal.
Yes, we have been. In the past, we've probably assisted between 115 to 130 households during a winter season.
I know recently the temperatures were negative 21 when we woke up in the morning, and it was very, very cold. So having a warm house, and if you have kids and pets, it makes a difference.
Yes. And this supplements the energy assistance program that's administered through Mid-Iowa Community Action, MICA. There are several other organizations in the community that help people with their utility bills, as well as other things such as rent and that type of thing.
It makes a difference.
Yes, it does.
And
there's a lot of need in this community. Yes, because it does take a commitment from everybody.
Central Iowa is a good place to live.
I'm from Iowa originally, so yes, I like it here. I like the change of seasons. I like the people. There's good values in the area.
Oh, definitely. Is there anything else that you want to share?
Well, like I said, this program supplements other programs, but we always would encourage additional donations. I think there's always a need out there. If we had more money, we'd assist more customers.
So how do people do that?
At least twice a year, we send out information with our utility bills. They're most likely to see that within a CitySide article. And it allows them to either make one-time donations, or they can pledge to do, you know, $1 a month or $2 a month or whatever they're comfortable with. And we add that to their utility bill. There's going to be a CitySide article about this program, kind of tell where we were year to date. And it gives people an opportunity to donate that. And that article is going to be in the CitySide that will be mailed with utility bills during the month of March.
Take a look and not discard them so readily. Because you can make a difference in people's lives.
Yes, and this is just one of the articles in CitySide. CitySide contains a lot of valuable information about the city, so I'd encourage people to look through that every month.
How long have you been working for the city of Ames? And this is, I'm talking with Mike Wheelock.
For a total of a little over 30 years now in a couple different positions. So it's a great organization, well-run. The people of Ames should be proud of the way their city government is run.
When people donate, they like to know that all their assistance is going to make a difference. And now it is in the city of Ames.
Goes to the cause they're contributing to.
Definitely. Yeah. Where'd the idea come up for this?
The idea came out of the fact that donations have been slightly down over the last few years, and we were looking for ways to get more money to assist customers. And one of the ways to do that would be to absorb more of the administrative costs. So the decision by the Project Share Committee was to absorb all of the administrative costs so that every dollar donated would go out to assist low-income households of our utility.
So 100% of the donations now to the Project Share go to help and better families. And this will be assisting, you know, 7 families that would not have had this opportunity.
Yeah, this change will allow us to assist about 7 more customers.
Or 7 more households.
Than we would have if the change had not been made. So it's about $800 more in assistance that will go out.
So if people were interested in giving to Project Share, how could they do that?
You could send a check and address it to City of Ames Project Share at 515 Clark Avenue, Ames, Iowa, 50010. You can also be watching for an article in the CitySide that will be mailed with your March utility bill that will tell how much assistance we've provided through the end of January, and it gives you an opportunity to make a one-time donation or monthly donations that we add to your utility bill.
So who is the Project Share Committee? Who's involved?
The committee is composed of 2 individuals from organizations that assist with low-income customers. Right now, it's someone from Mid-Iowa Community Action and someone from United Way. I'm on the committee, and then it's Electric Utility Operations and Review Board members are also on the committee. And they're appointed by the City Council.
So it's conscientious people doing good work.
Yes, it is.
Well, I'm happy that you came here today. I appreciate your time, sir.
You're welcome. It's nice to be able to talk about it.
Yeah, this is Mike Wheelock from the City of Ames. He is what is your designation again, sir?
My title is Utility Account Supervisor.
So you're the boss of all the utility accounts that go on in the City of Ames. Yeah.
We handle the billing, the collections, and the meter readings for the three utilities.
So you're intimately involved in many Ames residents' lives, you know, because when you go to pay your bills, it's can be, yeah, if you don't have enough money, it's traumatic.
Yes. The fact that the city operates that we know our customers well, we know that a lot of the ones that are struggling, we deal with them, you know, maybe on a monthly basis or a few times a year, which helps us get the funds to people we know are in need. The utilities can be disconnected during the winter, except for customers who have been qualified for the Energy Assistance Program. And those are the people that are eligible for this program, and this supplements that assistance. Because heating bills go up, whether it's electric heat or gas heat, even though they're protected during the winter time, they come out of the winter oftentimes owing large bills. So any assistance they can get with helping get those bills paid helps them keep their utilities throughout the year. Often they're working, they're not earning enough.
Called the working poor.
That's correct, yeah. For a customer to be eligible for our project share funds, there's two requirements. One is they're a customer of our utility. The second is that they have qualified for the energy assistance program that's administered by MICA. What's important about that is MICA determines whether or not they meet the income guidelines. Basically, criteria is, I believe, 150% of the federal poverty guidelines. But we get information from MICA as a utility. Any time someone qualifies for that program, they notify us of who's eligible, whether we're the primary vendor or the secondary vendor for that. So we're able to use the information they provide us to determine if a customer qualifies based on income. So we work closely with MICA on that. There should be programs by any electric or gas utility should have some type of customer contribution program similar to this.
Appreciate your time. Appreciate the good work that you're doing. And I'm glad that in-kind donations with the City of Ames have given seven more households in Ames the opportunity to make ends meet. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
To find out more about MICA, go online to micaonline.org.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I would like to thank our guests today, the owners of Ames Silversmith, Gary and Karen Youngberg, who spoke with Jim Werbel about co-preneurship. Jim also interviewed the creators and owners of Arcadia Coffee, Ryan Jeffrey and Liz Naylor. Both of these interviews showed some of the obstacles along with possibilities that can occur when partners and married couples work together as co-preneurs in a business venture. I had the opportunity to interview Mike Wheelock, Utilities Customer Service Supervisor of the City of Ames Electric Services. He was nice enough to come and share a change in policy that our local utilities have made to help out those who are in need in our community. The music you heard today was that of The Beatles, And I Love Her, The Bellamy Brothers, 1976 hit, Let Your Love Flow, and Vertical Horizon, Best I Ever Had, and Everything You Want. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. And of course, you're always welcome to drop into our studios at 410 Douglas in downtown Ames. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards
from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoyfm.org. That's khoyfm.org. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.